Crush, a podcast that's a little spooky, always sexy, and surprisingly educational. Every episode, we dare to find love in all the wrong places on our never-ending quest for the best monster smooches. I'm Heavenly, and I'm here to ask the real questions like, if your boyfriend is half man, half dog, is that a little too close to the wild side? And I'm joined by Derek. Derek, hello.
Hello, Heavenly. Thank you so much for bringing this question to our collective table today. It is a fascinating question, and one I'm uncomfortable with because you actually might even be picking up. My dog is right next to me, breathing very heavily, and weird question, but a good one. Don't get me wrong. Weirdly enough, the first thing that comes to mind is that Channing Tatum character from Jupiter Ascending. Did you ever see that movie?
I love dogs.
Exactly. Is that a little too close to the wild side? She did not think so. And, you know, I'm going to say for all of our werewolf listeners out there, no, it's totally fine. You do you.
You do you. But might I make, if your boyfriend or girlfriend, if your monster love does not have some human in them, that is too close to the wild side. Like, as in human, no, I don't want to make that statement. That's not true.
I was going to say, that negates the entire concept of this podcast.
So many of our monsters. What I mean when I say doesn't have human in them, I really do mean humanoid. Right? Like, if it's like a four-legged otter, dog, wolf, whale beast, should you date it?
Okay.
Can you love it? Yes. Can you smooch it? Of course.
It is so weird that you made that combination. I'm going to go on a tangent here. I watched a phenomenal movie last night, and I mean that in every inch of sarcasm that I could possibly fit into that sentence. I watched Sharktopus versus Whalewolf last night. Yes. Have you seen this masterpiece?
Of course I have.
Okay. Yeah, it is, of course, the third in the Sharktopus trilogy. Sharktopus being the first one, Sharktopus versus Terracuda, which is a Pteranodon, Pterodactyl, Barracuda creature. And then, versus Whalewolf was the third one, which was a man who is spliced with an orca and a wolf.
Right.
Yeah. So one of those weird kind of brain coincidences that you just happened to create that. And in that movie, he did not find romance. That creature did not particularly find romance. I believe it got blown up at the end.
Oof. Spoiler alert.
Yes. Spoiler alert. There's that. Oh man, that movie. I highly recommend anybody looking for just something to absolutely blow your mind. And also watch Casper Van Dien, who of course, you know, was the star of Starship Troopers, another fantastic movie. Yet to watch him badly act as if he's drunk. But yeah, it has everything. Has German scientists, voodoo, dick jokes about chickens. Everything you could possibly want in a film. So highly recommend.
I recommend all of sci-fi's versus movies are really...
Oh, yeah.
The creations that they pit against one another for our enjoyment is astounding.
It's so good. It's so good. I actually have the Sci-Fi Channel survival book, which lays out all of the different types of direct-to-sci-fi movie monsters that they have and the survival tactics against them. A particularly heavy-handed one is Ghost Shark, which is a shark that is able to travel through any type of water, even if it's like a faucet, and will eat people through that.
Oh, that sucks. I don't like that. That's not fair.
That's a tough one. You have to stay away from all water. Not great. Even then, ghost shark.
He can come into my cup of water?
Yes. Travels through water. It's a ghost shark.
Not only does he travel through water, it sounds like he can transport himself into water. Because, like, if I just have a cup of water, he can't travel into my cup of water from another stream of water, but he can just manifest himself into my water.
Any water. Yeah. Puddle. Pond. Yeah.
Reservoir.
Rain droplet. Don't go out in the rain.
Ooh, I think
there's one part where it appears in a sprinkler. like a lawn sprinkler. But also, I will say that, you know, sci-fi's movies do have a certain level of camp to them. The campiest, of course, being the Sharknado movies, which kind of just really embrace the campiness, maybe to a level that it shouldn't have. But I will say A Sharktopus versus Werewolf has the appropriate level of camp. There is a point where, again, spoiler, I suppose, but the main character has a voodoo doll of the Sharktopus and tries to make friends with it by shaking its tentacle. But then the Sharktopus, Hanna-Barbera, slaps him across the face several times, very, very, you know, Scooby-Doo, Grape Ape kind of way. Yeah. And I will say that was not the highlight of that movie, but certainly appreciated.
Right. Well, the reason I asked this question is part because it is relevant to today's episode, but also because occasionally, you know, I'm very vocal about my love for monsters. As everyone knows, and sometimes we deal with monsters that really don't seem to have very many human-like qualities. They walk on all fours. They're more of an amalgamation of different animals, and we still rate them on their smoochiness factor. But I think the smooch factor is devoid of sexual interest on our show, and I do just kind of want to make that clear that I'm not suggesting that we do bone half dog, half cat, half whale, half dolphin monsters, because I don't think you should.
That's fair.
But that a smooch as we use it in this show is more akin to like a friendly greeting.
Yeah, you know what? What's good? I smooch my dogs, give them, you know, nice little smooch on the nose, give them a little boop. But I would go no further with my pets. Right. Do I think that anyone should, for legal reasons, first and foremost, and moral reasons, I think actually even more first and foremost.
Yes. So I just wanted to make that clear because people do occasionally, in a bewildered tone, ask me very strange questions about what type of monsters I would, in fact, engage in sexual intercourse with. And the answer is ones that can consent.
Yes. That is, I think, our starting point for all types of monsters. I think we also assume that most of these monsters, I think a lot of the monsters that we bring to the table, we assume a level of sentience to them.
Yeah.
I mean, even when we talk about, you know, sea monsters, Loch Ness monsters, stuff like that, we assume a level of sentience to Nessie that Nessie is smart enough to avoid and not be found.
Right. Anyways, good clarifications have been made.
Yes.
Let's begin with what I've brought to you for your smoochiness factor. Smooch may lead to something a little more intimate, but that's between you and your bachelor or bachelorette. This week's theme is hybrids.
Ooh, that's fun. Well, actually, I do want to stop before we jump in because I actually had for you, and I know this is normally your thing, but I did bring some dun 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 spooky news.
Love it.
So, I actually brought three articles today that we'll kind of just touch on lightly, but all I think are appropriate in these strange quarantine times that we have. They all kind of talk about the way that either we interact with monsters or that monsters interact with us in this new normal that we have.
Mm.
So, the first article that I have is from Vice. It is Wear Your Mask in the Bush, The People Hunting for Bigfoot During COVID-19 by Mark Lemereau, which actually you shared with me. So I did read that article. Yes.
I read it over breakfast to some of my roommates and they all looked at me like I was like I had lost my mind.
It has some absolutely great parts. The general idea of this article is that is nature reclaims its you know, its hold on the world as humans have gone back into their homes and aren't going out into the wild anymore. Is Bigfoot doing the same thing? You know, they talk about goats taking over a Welsh town, and the wildcats and monkeys and all sorts of things like that are coming back into these formerly public spaces. So would
and most the frighteningly, the rats in New York are reclaiming the streets, which may lead to New York becoming an indoor only city.
Yes, the rats and the cockroaches will soon inhabit all of the streets of New York. We'll have it'll be Futurama pretty soon, and we'll have to travel by.
It'll be pizza. Two. Pizza Rat does have a gun now.
Oh, Pizza Rat, how far you've fallen! Pizza Rat had to turn to street crime. It got hooked on that cheese. So anyway, this article talks about it covers, like I said, a large part of that. I think that there's a part in it that says it's an awe-inspiring sight to imagine a gangly, hairy, muscular boy slowly striding like only Sasquatches can onto some turf in northern Oregon, reclaiming the land or the square of land in a small victory for the whole of Bigfoot kind. And I think that's a beautiful sentiment. It's a beautiful image.
Yeah. One of the things that I loved about the article is when it talked about whether or not Bigfoot noticed that we were gone, that maybe, you know, we were in the woods less. And one of my favorite quotes was, do you notice when the flies in your garage leave? Probably not. I don't think Bigfoot cares.
That was a good part. Yeah. Well, they talk about Bigfoot being, you know, mostly nocturnal. They probably wouldn't notice us. But yeah, the article goes on to talk about how even Bigfoot researchers are concerned that Bigfoot could potentially catch COVID-19 from them. So Bigfoot researchers who are going out are trying to wear masks just in case they encounter a Bigfoot, because they don't want to decimate a potentially endangered or potentially non-existent. I don't know. But yeah, if the Bigfoot community is very small, they might completely wipe it out by accident.
Ugh, that'd be tragic.
It would be. And we might not even know. But yeah, I'm trying to remember, there was a certain part where it said that that researchers should try their best not to get a close encounter. So apparently they've been holding back this whole time, which is good. Apparently if they, you know, after COVID-19, we can try harder to get that close encounter. And yeah, finally get that Sasquatch proof.
Right, right. I mean, until we know more. You should, in these times, maintain a 6-foot distance, even from your most monstrous friends and family.
That's true. That's true. Which actually, our next article comes from the New York Times, which talks about some monsters that may not be susceptible. It comes from the New York Times. It is by Molly Fitzpatrick, and it is titled, Quarantining with a Ghost? It's Scary. And it is all about how in these strange quarantine times, people have been reporting ghost sightings in their homes at an alarmingly higher rate.
Right, because they're home more. So they're just like your schedule is now, you're running into these odd moments with your roommate who perhaps worked from home. The ghosts who were used to frolicking freely while you were at your office job, you know, their schedule is now beholden to yours.
Absolutely. Yeah, these ghosts were used to you leaving and just having the house to themselves, and now you're both like trying to watch Netflix at the same time.
It's weird. It's awkward.
You're hogging the remote, and your Civil War ghost that lives in your home, he just wants to watch the Civil War documentary. He wants to see if he shows up in one of those photos. There's one guy who noticed that his door handle was shaking, and then his windows were shaking, and he's hiding under the blankets and all sorts of stuff like that. And there's kind of two theories that this covers, is that either since people are home more, are they actually seeing apparitions? Are they, It even says in the article, to borrow the technical parlance of Ghostbusters, free floating, full torso, vaporous apparitions. Or are people just, they haven't been home, people work themselves to the bone. Are these just the noises that their house normally makes during a certain time and they're just not used to it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they interview John E.L. Tenney, who describes himself as a paranormal researcher and is a former host of the TV show Ghost Stalkers. Don't stalk ghosts, guys.
Hate to see it happen.
They deserve their privacy.
Wait, but is that TV show about people being stalked by ghosts or ghosts being stalked by humans?
I'm going to say it's Ghost Stalkers. There's no like hyphen in between or anything. I'm going to say that's people who stalk ghosts.
Oh, I think it's about people who are stalked by ghosts.
Well, we need to watch it now and find out which one of us is right.
And it could be a combination of the two.
It very well might. Yeah. The hunter is becoming the hunted continuously throughout every episode. But he actually talks about something interesting, how in 1999, apparently he's been hunting ghosts for quite some time, but apparently before Y2K, people were reporting a spike in ghost and poltergeist activity, as well as UFO sightings, which he also notes as UFO sightings being on the rise during the same time. And he says that it has something to do with our heightened state of anxiety and our hypervigilance, that people are, you know, they even talk about it scientifically. When you are scared, you pick up more sensory information. You know, if you ever see photos of the haunted house where something jumps out and they take the photo right then, there's series of them. Series, not a word. But no, there's full series of photos from people who go into haunted houses, and there's that one scary moment, a photo flashes, and it's always like everybody grabbing onto each other. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the person's face, their eyes are wide, their mouth is open, their nostrils are flared. They're picking up, it's literally the body picking up every type of sensory information that it possibly can to determine the fight or flight response. So yeah, in this time, our anxiety, our hypervigilance, like he says, is so high that we're picking up on stuff we didn't used to, and we're attributing it potentially to ghost activity.
For those of you who have never lived in old houses, I've lived in old houses in various stages of my life, and it is very common for old houses to just, the walls begin to ooze blood, and it's alarming when it first happens, but that's one of the joys of living in an old house, is it does kooky things. The stairs creak, ooze comes out of strange cavities, you know? That's just what it's like living in an old house.
Yeah, the realtor should really notify you of at least the blood type of the blood seeping from your walls.
This is a blood house.
It depends on the state you live in. There's different laws. Heavenly, do you have any ghost experience? Have you ever experienced a ghostly encounter? I know we've talked about before your night hag, your skinwalker.
My alien abduction.
That's right, yeah.
It was actually more like an alien home invasion.
Aren't they all?
In a sense, yes. Yeah. I'm also a very sensitive, I'm a sensitive bitch. So I
definitely. You are. Oh, whatever I tell my friends, I'm like, Natalie, she's a sensitive bitch.
Yeah, I pick up on a lot of things that aren't there because I'm just afraid of everything and I'm always in a state of anxiety. But, you know, actually, this article does ring, it lands close to home because in my own home where I live now, there's five of us and four of us are now home all of the time with two cats. One of the cats has begun to act very strange. His head will start whipping back and forth as if he's following something's flight path in the corners of the house. We have a garage that has a door that leads into the house. He will go over to the garage door and meow at it insistently in this really high-pitched kind of special meow that he does. So we are wondering if maybe we have a ghost in our house.
Man, every time I shouldn't ask you this shit anymore, because every time I do, you always do have an answer, and it always scares the shit out of me. Okay, so I personally don't have any ghost experience. Maybe it's just like they don't like me, they don't want me to notice. I don't know. I've lived in a number of places all across this country. Granted, a few of them were like rentals, whatever. So maybe no ghosts there. I don't know. But I have never experienced ghosts. My mom has several ghost stories that I always like to tell. She grew up in a very old farmhouse in southern Ohio, and even my dad, who is a very, you know, no nonsense kind of person, you know, he's not the kind of guy. My mom loves fantasy and sci-fi. I get all of that from her. My dad's not super into it, so he's not the kind of person who's looking to the sky for aliens or, you know, super interested in Bigfoot or anything like that, which is totally fine. But even he talks about how when he went to pick up my mom once, And this is kind of something that a lot of people who would pull up to their old farmhouse, everyone would kind of comment about the small boy with the kind of outdated clothing and the Dutch boy haircut who would stand in the window. It was a small child who would just stare out the window. And everybody would come in and go, hey, are you like babysitting? And, you know, my grandma or whoever was there at the time would always say, no, we just... try not to worry about that, and that just be the end of it. And my mom actually wrote, she has a blog, she has a couple of blogs, but in one of them she talks
Mama
about
what? Mama Sword has a blog? Are you going to plug it?
I'm trying to remember what it is. I will plug it in potentially the next one.
I'll put it in the show notes. Send it to me later.
I think one of her old ones is Raising a Super Dog. They're all about, my mom raises service dogs and service puppies. So a lot of it's about that, but she does some Halloween ones, which are really good. And my mom's a phenomenal writer. She's an award-winning writer. She's absolutely awesome. But she talks about how that farmhouse is no longer there anymore. It got bulldozed to the ground. And one of her final lines that, I mean, it feels like something out of a Stephen King book. It's one of my favorite lines that I've ever read, just happens to come from her. But she finishes kind of the post with, where do the ghosts go when the walls are gone?
Ooh.
So I think that's really good. And she also says that the house that they live in now, that we moved into that house on my 6th birthday. And I basically lived, you know, up until the age of, until I left for college there. And she talks about how in the first couple of months, there was some weird stuff. How they would be sleeping in the middle of the night and then hear a loud noise and come downstairs. And the TV would be on to static with the volume turned all the way up. And she noticed that, like, her keys would go missing for, like, days at a time and then appear in a very, like, right on the counter in a very obvious space. And it kind of even mentions that in the article, how people, you know, will set something down, then turn around and it'll be gone. But she said after a couple of months, it just stopped. So maybe it's just ghosts just getting bored.
It is maybe the worst when ghosts attempt to gaslight you.
It's just rude, you know. It's from a previous time, but it's 2020, ghosts. Come on. There's another article, which I'm not going to touch on as much, but it's from the News and Observer, which talks about kind of in the same thread how people are in these quarantines seeing other creatures. And apparently there's been an uptick of pteranodon or pterodactyl sightings in the Carolinas. So, yeah, there's several sightings. It's by Abby Bennett and Josh Schaefer. And it talks about how apparently sightings of weird flying creatures, which I guess are UFOs, technically, just not aliens. But yeah, apparently there's pterodactyl sightings all over the Carolinas right now. Like even in Raleigh, this major city, people are looking up and seeing stuff that they don't recognize. Ooh. Which we've kind of talked about that a little bit before, how maybe that ties in to just people not paying attention or not noticing the animals that actually live in their natural environments that are now encroaching on these public spaces.
Right. Interesting. Very interesting.
But the final article I have, which is cute, we'll end this on a cute note. There is a particular yokai, which we've talked about yokai before, they're Japanese demon monster things, that is helping the Japanese people build their morale, as well as kind of fight off COVID-19. And it is the mythical Amabii, as I believe how it's pronounced. It's Amabii. And it is a 19th century folklore yokai, which actually I'm going to share a photo of this because it is particularly adorable. So basically in the, what would that be? If you can hear my dog, once again, we're a dog-friendly podcast.
That's right.
Yes, he gets very bored sometimes. So in 1846, the Amabii emerged from the ocean and spoke in human language, predicting 6 years of good harvest, followed by a wave of diseases.
Oh.
Yeah. Good news and bad news. But the creature advised, draw me and show me to the people so you can be free of disease. Oh. And so apparently this creature was printed on, you know, they say in Japanese news sheets using clay or wood blocks. And this image got spread around. And so kind of in that same vein, the Japanese are trying to share that creature again, which I think is really nice. And yeah, it's being done in proper anime style. So I'm going to try to share it here with you because, like I said, it's weirdly cute.
Oh, ooh. Oh, wow. Glamorous.
Right?
She has so, these long locks of flowing silver hair and little, you know, the kind of fishy ears, the gill ears or webbed ears.
Yeah, like fin ears.
What looks like a beak, a duck beak. She has these beautiful sparkly blue eyes, very reminiscent of an anime character when they see something they really like. Pink skin with, it looks like some acne, which is kind of cool. and then like a fish body that's pink and blue. So she does say trans rights. And it ends in these three beautiful, beautifully colored flippers. It's like an orange hue. Lovely, just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually really nice. And there's, you know, every type of artist out there is sharing this. But yeah, it's a creature with a bird's head, human hair, and a fish's scaly body. And yeah, it says that even by the Edo period, people had stopped believing that yokai were real, but also the increase in interest in yokai as just an art form increased doubly. So yeah, the Amabiai got shared more and more. And as this kind of pestilence and plague fighter, it's now being shared all around Japan, just kind of as a morale booster, which I think is really nice. You know, some monsters can do good in this world.
Oh, so cute. I love that.
So that is all I have for spooky news.
Spooky news. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Okay, let's get started. So these are our hybrids, our hybrid boys, our hybrid bachelors and bachelorettes. Bachelor number one. So in addition to possessing renown as an ancient being of immense power, our first bachelor is also a Hollywood star. And that is an honor that no other Babylonian demon shares.
Wow.
I know. Huh. But before we go further, I do want to address the term demon and how it will be used in reference to Bachelor One, and something that we can continue to think about as we inevitably add more demons to our roster. So the connotation with the word today, which is kind of an evil, malevolent entity from the realm of hell, is Christian in nature. Probably no shocker to anyone. However, right. In Mesopotamian writings, supernatural beings are generally amoral. And while demons were considered evil beings, they were not of evil, if that makes sense. Like, they were definitely little shitheads, but they kind of weren't born as these evil, nasty creatures meant to wreak havoc. And in fact, demons were even used as protection against other forms of evil. This idea that you need to fight fire with fire.
Yeah, it's weird that demons have been so Christianized, considering the term kind of is ubiquitous. You know, even when we talk about yokai, those are considered demons,
right?
But they don't come from hell necessarily.
No, and demon just, it comes from a word that just means spirit. So they're just, yeah. I mean Damon, as which I think a lot of people would recognize from Pullman's his Dark Materials, they have demons. It's just a spirit.
Yeah, which even in the show they pronounce that as demons.
So, right. I think that is how it is pronounced, but it's spelled. It looks like it's spelled Damon's.
Yeah, it's the D-A-E.
I always pronounced it Damon's, but what the fuck do I know? I pronounce everything wrong. demons were part of the larger divine plan, so their machinations were really left for mortals to uncover. They didn't have clear-cut plans, and we were just really meant to interpret how they were in our lives, how we saw fit. They often served or worked in tandem with gods, so torment from them could actually be punishment from a god whom you failed to appease or serve. As the Christian period began, there was no need for the duality of demonic beings, and with Christian hell already there and demons belonging to a natural and a moral underworld, it was really easy to cast them further into the pits and paint their every action as hellish and evil. So, understanding our first bachelor's label as a demon softens just a bit in the light of history and ancient texts. So, now on to the accomplishments of our demon bachelor. He is said to be the son of Hanbi or Hanba, the king of the demons, and his brother to Humbaba, who is a demon god featured in the epic of Gilgamesh. Our bachelor is in control of the west and southwest winds, which are attributed to famine in the dry seasons and storms and locusts in the wet seasons. Now, I'm going to describe him, and it is going to be a little scary, and I'm sorry for that.
No, it's okay. Yeah, please.
He has two human legs with human arms that end in claws. Not so bad so far. We're off to a good start. Two pairs of wings, which is kind of like that butterfly shape, you know, the upper and then the lower wing.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. You don't see that too much. Well, I was going to say Mothman, but I don't even think Mothman had butterfly wings.
No. I mean, these are two distinct wings, but they have that kind of shape when you're looking at him from the front. The two big wings upwards and then the two smaller wings downwards.
Right. Okay.
He has a scorpion's tail.
Uh-huh.
Horns.
Okay.
A canine mouth.
Okay.
A beard.
Okay.
And an erect penis that has a snake head.
All right.
I cannot stress this enough. It is always erect.
Always erect, always. So is that just a snake then?
Yeah.
I mean,
one could argue that it is just a snake penis.
It's just a snake at that point. It's not. I mean, you don't see like a flaccid snake.
Ooh, good question. Are snakes always erect?
Oh, no. It was a question I didn't mean to ask. All right. So, okay. So, human arms with claws, human legs, scorpion tail, dog mouth with a beard, bearded dog. Okay.
Bearded dog and horns.
Yeah, the horns seem standard. The wings and the horns for a demon, those are standard.
Yeah.
You know, butterfly wings, that's different though.
Yeah.
But
he's like your first OC that was a fairy.
That's right. Yeah. Shoot. So it's kind of be like hard for him to like walk through stores. I feel like he's always knocking stuff off of shelves with his weird erect snake penis.
Oh, absolutely. Can it grab things? Who knows?
Can it?
Does it hiss? I don't know.
Yeah. Does it talk to you? Does it have another name?
Ooh, could Harry Potter talk to his dick?
Oh, man. Could he? Please, little boy, stop talking to my dick. I'm going to get arrested.
It's incredibly inappropriate. People would often carry more portable versions of his visage featuring only his head or miniature versions of his full dicks out for windy days form.
I just imagine, you know, if you carry it, like if you had a little keychain, I just think the dick would be the first thing to break off in your pocket. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, it would have to be just the head because otherwise you're like, oh man, I gotta get a new demon keychain. It's dick. I've been super gluing this thing back on and it's unsettling every time, but right. I guess, yeah.
Much like how on statues, the nose is kind of the first to get knocked off because it protrudes.
Yeah.
And so it'll catch corners. I imagine that his dick is usually the first to go.
Yeah, it's always the nose and the genitals are the first things to go on statues.
It was uncommon to have statues or amulets featuring demons of the underworld because it was thought to focus their attention on you. But by having small pieces set aside in certain rooms, it was believed to harness the power and attentions of the demon in a more palpable way so they could act as a protective rather than destructive force.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Like, demons are a force of nature sort of thing. They're an elemental.
Well, this guy for sure is because he controls the winds.
Right, yeah. He has the southwest and
south and the which winds does he have? He has the west and southwest winds.
Okay, he's got a couple of winds. Okay.
He's got two winds. Because he was so powerful, he was invoked as a protection against other lesser demons. And he would often protect pregnant women and children from the demon Lamashtu, who preyed on both the un and the newly born.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah. You know, it's like you hire the biggest bully to pick on the smaller bullies.
Exactly. Fight fire with fire.
Yeah. It's got like a predator thing. Doesn't go after kids or pregnant women. I don't know why I thought of that, but that is something from the Predator movies. Look it up.
That's weird. So a predator could feasibly be used as an effective pregnancy test?
Yeah, actually. If you've ever seen Predator 2 with Danny Glover, phenomenal movie, by the way. But the Predator gets on a subway in New York, and this is, of course, 80s New York, so everybody is literally armed with a revolver that also has a scope attached to it for some fucking reason. Because the Predator views anyone with a weapon as being, you know, fair game, as being prey, something they should hunt, the Predator slaughters everybody in the train except for female detective. She survives. Everybody else is slaughtered. Old women, guys, everything. Even though the detective is armed, the Predator disarms her and just leaves her unconscious. And you find out that the Predator used its like heat vision to actually see the baby like in her womb, essentially. Interesting.
How many weeks pregnant was she? Did she know?
She didn't. It was like revealed to everybody else that as they're like carting her out, they're like, oh, she was the only survivor, but we got to get her to the hospital. Turns out she's pregnant.
So she didn't even know. So, like, she's probably less than, like, 10 weeks pregnant.
If I remember right, I think the heartbeat was part of it. It maybe wasn't the heat vision thing, but the Predator's got that whole mask set up.
Yeah, but I mean, the fetus doesn't have a heartbeat at less than 10 weeks. What kind of weird pro-life message is this in the Predator movie?
I don't know. Yeah, we're not taking a stance here for either side of that, but absolutely, yeah. I think the Predator was, I don't know. I'm stopping at this point. The Predator knew she was pregnant. Okay, it's weird alien science magic. I don't know.
Okay, well, fair enough. The last little bit about him, which I do think is a bit manipulative, but he was also used as a protective force against the ill effects of the winds he was also responsible for. So that's a bit of a racket.
I don't know. Maybe it's like he's just like in charge of them. Maybe it's like the guy who's in charge of a nuclear reactor. Maybe that's a bit extreme. But, you know, a nuclear reactor needs somebody to manage it or else it will, you know, blow up and destroy everybody.
I don't know. It does say that he is in control of them, not just that he is the boss of them. It's almost like he like shows up at your house and he's like, "Meh, here the southwest winds are blowing. It'd be a shame if something happened to your crops."
You know, be ashamed. I don't know, I would also argue that I am in control of my dogs, but only when they're on a leash. So I'm actually going to give him benefit of the doubt on this one.
All right, fair enough. That's all I have for you for Bachelor number one.
Interesting. It is hard. Metaphorically, and I think literally, to see past the erect snake penis. But you know what? I'm not going to judge too soon. I've learned from previous episodes that sometimes things are straight downhill, and maybe this is the best it's going to get. So yeah, I'm not going to write this bachelor off just yet. So let's see what else you got.
So our second singleton has also had a brush with fame and is featured in Arthurian legend.
Hmm.
It is described as having a leopard's body, a serpent's head, a lion's hindquarters, and a hart's feet, and a deer. Oh, you do?
I do, yeah. This is the questing beast.
It is. Do you know both versions of the questing beast?
I don't. I know what it is. I don't know the story behind it. All right, so enrapture me.
So a sound emanates from its belly that sounds like a pack of hunting dogs, and it gets its name, which I can now tell you, the questing beast. It gets its name because it is meant to be the object of a quest. Its kind of sole role in life is for people to have a quest that involves hunting it.
Now, its whole existence kind of seems built around that. Like, I sound like the thing that's probably going to find me.
Now, I do want to we did just do a medieval episode where I did describe from medieval beasties animals that we know to exist. So I do want to say that the description of this does look like what a medieval artist would draw upon hearing a description of a giraffe.
Oh, so, yeah, absolutely. It's like, ooh, it has the head of a snake and the feet of a deer and the body of a... Yeah, I think this probably just was a giraffe.
So you can imagine this. I mean, the image I'll show you is definitely a 4 feet on the ground, low body. But you could also imagine a giraffe, whatever you want.
Right. It's that whole thing with... you're familiar with, like, St. George and the dragon, right? The St. George was a Christian saint, Catholic saint, who slayed a dragon. And most historians are just pretty sure that he was a Roman who killed a crocodile in Africa. Yeah, well, and everybody's like, it was a dragon.
Everything was a dragon back then. So there are two versions of the role the beast has in Arthur's story, and one is a metaphor for Christ. But the most famous of the two is
everything
from...
Everything was. Yeah. King Arthur's just, I'm going to go search for this metaphor for Christ. I thought you went searching for a metaphor for Christ last week, sir. Oh, yes, but I didn't find that metaphor for Christ, so I'm going searching for this metaphor for Christ.
This is a different metaphor.
That metaphor was a cup.
So the most famous of the two versions is from the post-Vulgate account, which says that Arthur, after banging his half-sister, sees the beast yep. drinking from a lake after he had an awful dream about his son's destruction of the realm. Now, in Arthur's defense, he did not know that it was his half-sister. He did just think she was very sexy.
That's true.
King Pellinore shares with Arthur that it is his family's duty to hunt the beast, it is the family's quest, who was born from the incestuous lustings of a princess who made a deal with the devil to make her brother fall in love with her. Instead, the devil sleeps with the woman and manipulates her into accusing her brother of rape. The brother is torn apart by dogs for his crime, and as the dogs descend upon him, he tells his sister she will give birth to a monster that makes the same sounds as the dogs as they tear him apart.
That is
it's deep.
Yeah, and also very shallow at the same time. I feel like that's something that probably got published like directly to Kindle. It's like, yeah, no, guy slept with his half-sister but didn't know it, but at the same time, there's a monster that was born from a lady who wanted to sleep with her brother but didn't, but slept with the devil, and the devil made her accuse the brother that she wanted to sleep with of rape, and then there was a monster.
Yeah.
$9.99 exactly. on Kindle.
Yeah. $9.99? That's a $3.99 at best, and it goes on sale often for $1.99.
Listen, somebody who wrote that does not know the actual quality of what they wrote, okay?
So the other recounting of the story is considered to be the least canonical by everyone.
Okay.
Mainly because it has so many differences from it. Basically there are, you know, themes and similarities through all of the different Arthurian accountings. And this one is just really out of left field. And so everyone's like, obviously he was doing his own thing. And cannot be considered to be true. So in his version, or rather in this version, the beast is lovely to look at with white fur and it's smaller than a fox. And the sound it makes is actually the sound of its offspring ripping their way out of it. And in this version, the beast is a symbol of Christ as he is destroyed by the 12 tribes of Israel. And in later recountings of the same version, the same non-canonical Arthur legend, it's a metaphor for people who won't shut the fuck up during mass.
Hate those people. Guys up there trying to read a book, let them read.
The beast was also featured in a 1967 episode of Lost in Space.
Huh, okay. Couple of movie monsters.
Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to do a movie monster theme, but I had already decided on my hybrid theme, so we'll shelve that for another day.
There's plenty of chances for movie monsters.
That was for Singleton 2, now moving on to Bachelorette 3. Our third Bachelorette is the picture of beauty and maidenhood in old Russian society. She has the body of a bird and the head of a beautiful woman, and she does not have boobies.
Okay. So, as in the same way that birds do not have boobies.
Yeah. I say this because despite the fact that she has no boobs, because she does have a bird body, and birds don't have boobs, much art depicts her with really big knockers.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens.
She doesn't have boobs, okay? She doesn't have... her body is literally... it's a bird with a human head. There's no space for boobs.
Is it like normal bird sized, or is this like the original siren where it's like a human sized bird body, or is this like a sparrow that is?
It's human sized. She's actually kind of the counterpart. She exists in tandem with the siren.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it would be unsettling to see a fully sized, you know, full woman's head on, like, the body of a sparrow or robin.
Yeah, that'd be just terrifying.
Flight is heavy. Yeah. Or even, I think, small person head where it's just yelling at you.
Yeah, that'd be really scary, too.
Yeah.
So, unlike the siren, who's kind of her cousin, okay, she is the image of beauty and docility. And when she sings, her voice is so beautiful that those who hear it are immobilized and forget everything they are doing just so they can stay and listen.
Oh, that sounds nice.
In the Russian Orthodox Church, she's considered to be a personification of God's will, and she is used to illustrate the Holy Spirit. And so her likeness can be found on household goods, such as pottery and pendants and wood carvings and churches or in costume designs.
All right. That sounds actually really, really nice. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on this one.
That's literally all I have on her. Okay. I do just want to add that birds do not have breasts. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
I mean, they do.
They don't have boobies.
They don't have boobies. They do have breasts.
Right.
Yes.
But they don't have boobies.
Yes.
They don't have mammaries. They don't have mammal breasts.
Right.
They have breast meat.
Yes.
But no boobies.
I'm glad we cleared that up. This has been our very bad TED Talk.
I think it's a good TED Talk because apparently not enough people know this.
Yeah, I think they know. It's just, it's really hard getting past that horniness.
Our final bachelorette is from the south of France. And so she does speak the language of love.
Okay.
In addition to her dreamy French accent, her penchant for smoking and love of cheese, she is a dragon with 6 stubby bear legs, the body of an ox covered by a shell, a scorpion tail, and a grumpy lion face.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah.
She is said to be the offspring of Leviathan of Book of Job fame and a previous bachelor on our show, the Bonacon, which was the ox that shoots fire poops.
Okay. Yeah. Book of Job, by the way.
Oh, I don't know. I never read
the Bible. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
I thought it was the Book of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just the book where, you know, all Christians go to be like, well, you can become a mechanic or a teacher or an airline pilot.
Or a stay-at-home mom.
That's the first one that's listed.
Although she actually immigrated from Turkey, she made France her home and was impossible to kill. This distressed the people very much, obviously. But when Saint Martha, at the time, obviously just simple Martha, came to town, the woman knew exactly what to do. She found it eating a man, doused it with holy water, showed it a wooden cross, and found that the creature became docile. She bound it with her girdle, a symbol of her virginity, and brought it to the town. Frightened, the townspeople stabbed it to death, but were overcome with sorrow immediately, but a little too late, and they named their town after the dragon.
That's right. This is the Tarrasque.
Yes.
Yes. I play D&D once a week. How did I not remember? Yes, this is the Tarrasque. It's just not as horrifying as the Dungeons and Dragons version of its same name.
Today, a statue of the dragon stands in the town square, and she is featured prominently in their seasonal festivities.
That's lovely. France has actually a lot of great dragon stories.
They do.
And yes, the Tarrasque is one of the best ones. It's weird little turtle dragon monster.
Well, those are our bachelors and bachelorettes and singletons for today.
Those were absolutely lovely. It is a lot better, I think, than the poop eating hunk ghosts and and Bonacon and others and that the our medieval monsters. No, these were absolutely lovely. So okay, so we have our snake penis Babylonian demon boy.
Yep.
We have the Tarrasque at the end. Remind me the questing beast. That's right. And then the Russian siren cousin.
Yes.
Okay. I really thought that this would be another episode where snake penis was going to be the, pardon the term, but pinnacle of where we were going to, where our monsters were going to get. But I think that you started on the bottom end there. I have no qualms against this individual's chosen nudism. But I just think, you know, if we were going to see a movie or something, it'd be tough. You'd have to sit in the very front row, or he's going to bump somebody in the back of the head with that thing. Yeah. And then, you know, the snake's eating the popcorn, and that's just not sanitary.
No.
So yes, I'm going to have to say thanks for the application, but no rose for our first bachelor.
Ugh. That is Pazuzu. I am
Pazuzu.
Yeah, he was featured in The Exorcist.
That's right. And yeah, there's also a gargoyle named Pazuzu in Futurama, which I seem to remember for some reason.
This is obviously not the Pazuzu who is the murderer who changed his name to Pazuzu. This is a different Pazuzu.
Yes.
This is the OG Pazuzu.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Pazuzu.
I sent you a statue of him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, see, I imagined very much like the, when I imagined Babylonian, I was almost thinking that a lot of times the genitalia on these creatures is somehow very exaggerated. And maybe it's just broken off on this statue, like we discussed, but it is more subtle.
Yeah, it is. It's really just the head of the snake that's kind of poking out.
Okay. Yeah, I really imagine that this thing would be, you know, like you...
Like sticking a full foot out.
Yeah, like you see the statue of the Earth Mother, where it's literally just hips, boobs, and butt. And that it's literally just a circle that is just that. And it's supposed to determine, you know, femininity and female beauty and also, you know, birth and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so we have Questing Beast.
So here's an image of the Questing Beast. I know you've probably seen what he looks like, but there he is. He's drinking some water.
Yeah, okay. See, and he's fine. It's definitely a giraffe that just has a snake head instead.
It is a giraffe.
It's a giraffe. Yeah. It's King Arthur just killing a giraffe. It's King Arthur going on safari and killing a giraffe. It's not great. I'm going to say probably no to the Questing Beast. I think that I am not going to particularly quest for that beast.
Okay, fair enough. Our third one, our bird maiden, is the Alkanost. Okay. And here is a little photo of her in all her beauty.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, she's got a nice little necklace. She's got a little hat. That's nice. Little bird body. And she sings so nice. That's so great. Beautiful. She's in the running for first right now between her and the Tarrasque. Yeah, I'm going to say probably the Tarrasque. I just know that I couldn't bring a Tarrasque like to a D&D party. He'd want to play a Tarrasque. And I just can't do it. It's a level, you know, CR30 monster. Oh, what's that? That last one is another Tarrasque?
It's just a weird drawing that someone did of a Tarrasque. I don't like it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I love the statue that appears in France. Just got a little spiked turtle body and a person head with, you know, it's got like a nice bob haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and six legs. Very loose interpretation of dragon, but I still dig it. I still dig
and
the...
And she is a woman. She is a woman.
Oh, is it?
She is gendered. She? Okay. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I never knew that. All right, learned something new today. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Russian bird lady. Would you say the name was?
Alkanost.
How do you spell that? Okay, so Alkanost. Alkanost. That's a really cool... I had never heard of those. Yeah, and I think the nice, lovely singing. I don't mind the no boobies. I'm okay with that. It's really okay.
Because you're very brave.
Yeah, that's what it is. You don't need to put boobs on everything. I think that's what it comes down to. So, Heavenly, thank you so much for bringing these amazing monsters. Yeah.
Let me just quickly thank my sources. So, absolutely. For Pazuzu, I used the Ancient History Encyclopedia as well as a exhibit from the Met Museum they did on Pazuzu. For the Questing Beast, I literally just used Wikipedia because it was very, very detailed and I didn't want to read the Arthurian legends.
That's fair. Totally fair.
For the Alkanost, I used Ancient Origins. And for the Tarrasque, I used the Folklore Society and Atlas Obscura.
Wonderful. Well, while we are in the thanking mood, I would like to extend a thank you to first and foremost Richard, our super producer, who I'm sure is going to have some great work on this show, on this episode in particular. Richard, thank you so much. You do some awesome, amazing work, and we very, very much appreciate it. I also want to thank Alexander Geisler, who does the music for our opening. Fantastic musician, and if you'd like, you can follow him on Instagram at Cherboye, that is at Cherboje. We also want to thank the Nerdsmith Network. They are absolutely filled with amazing other shows. There's one that actually, very much in the vein of this, talks about D&D monsters. So if you enjoy what we do, I don't think they're near as sexy as we are, but that's nothing against them. That's just what they choose to do. But definitely check them out. Check all the other great shows out on the Nerdsmith Network. They do a lot of D&D and TTRPG podcasts, and they're all phenomenal. You can't go wrong. Definitely, if you enjoyed what we did today, rate, review, subscribe. We appreciate all of that. And actually, if you leave a review, a positive review, or hell, even if it's a negative review and it's funny, we'll read it on this show. We will read your 5 stars. We'll read what you have to say. And we always appreciate it from the very bottom of our hearts. And definitely, if you, once again, like what we did, tweet at us. You can tweet at us at Monster Crushing. And yeah, I'm sorry. My dog is an absolute monster right now. Hi, bud. You're a good dog. Tweet at us at Monster Crushing. And tell us what you would like to see on the show. Tell us your monster crush. Tell us what types of creatures you want to see on future shows. Or just tell us what monsters you'd like to love. And with all of that said, Heavenly, I just want to say, what are we going to say for this one? It's still the quarantine, so I do want to say, stay distant.
Stay distant.
But also, you know, stay loving. Love your monsters, regardless of how they come. If you need to, you can date Pazuzu. I'm sure his snake penis, if it is exaggerated, you can use that as a measurement of distance. Maybe that's his 6 feet. Is, oh, ooh. The snake. Yeah.
Yeah.
6 foot snake dick. Who knows?
Who knows?
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate you listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye. I hope Richard leaves in the little song that I sung while I was trying to reconnect to the internet. Maybe put that at the end as a little treat. The house is really big, and we've got lots of internet trouble. Da 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 da. Do do do. Da da da. Boop boop boop. All right. I'm back.